The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay. So, good to sit with you. I hope those instructions made some sense or something. Just as a word, I sort of like presume that people have kind of have their own meditation experience. That would not be a good first meditation instruction. So I apologize if that was your first. Anyway, I'm happy to be with you. And it's been a while since I've been here. On YouTube, and excited to explore. So it's hard to talk about Dharma, because what is wisdom in one moment is a mistake in another. And I'm not saying that to be cute. It's like, what is wisdom in one moment is a mistake in another. And there is no single kind of Dharma drum that we can just march to, independent of context, independent of the nuance of samsara, this world. And wisdom really creates the path rather than follows it. It's not that there's a preordained path and then wisdom is just following it. We're actually creating a path. And the way it strikes me, the way that delusion works is often not that we do kind of like the opposite of the teachings. It's not that the teachings say, do X and we do not X. The way delusion works is we pick the wrong teaching. We pick the teaching that allows us to act out our underlying habit energy or craving. And so we need fierce determination and we pick self-compassion, or we need self-compassion and we pick fierce determination. And part of the skill in Dharma practice is knowing which teaching to reach for. And the Dharma is really, it's found in kind of these dynamic tensions, right? Like determination, self-compassion, these things. Pairs of values that we dance between. And a couple years ago on this stream, I highlighted a few pairs, and this week more pairs of these values we dance between. And this week it's really it's a kind of dialectic of the more assertive qualities of mind and the more receptive qualities. And so today, confidence and humility, confidence and humility, so much confidence and so much humility. And maybe it sounds like those are in, you know, deep tension, but they're really complementary heart qualities. So the more deeply we taste the Dharma, the more devotional we become, the more confident we become. We don't have to be a devotional person. I don't know that I would cast myself as a devotional person or a devotional type. When your heart is nourished by the Dharma in the way that it can nourish us, you just bow down. It breeds a kind of devotional reverence. So Gill wrote said awakening is not the end of practice. Awakening is the confirmation that the practice works. Awakening solidifies our confidence in Dharma practice. We understand that when done sincerely, a beginner's practice is as valuable and meaningful as that of an experienced practitioner. The greater our maturity with practice, the more often and more confidently we can begin afresh, always ready to keep practicing. When I think about characterizing kind of some of the effects of practice, one piece that feels important is there's sort of there's no more doubt that my real life is like just out there somewhere. It's just this. It's just this. And there's no more sense of dislocation, the kind of subtle alienation that who I am, my life, is sort of like just beyond my reach, that I'm chasing something down, that that in my aspiration, there's a sense of dislocation and alienation. No, just this, enough. And there's a sense of a deep kind of self-confidence, which I would say is something akin to like a sense of complete sufficiency, right? Sufficiency, not greatness, not amazing, not special, complete sufficiency. We come to learn, we understand more, we become more confident, better and better at predicting what leads us to happiness. And so often in our life, we're sort of surprised that when we get what we want, it's different than what we thought we were getting. We become more calibrated in this way. We're better predictors of our own happiness, and that breeds a kind of confidence. We become more confident that no matter what happens in our life, what befalls us, there's some way that Dharma can sanctify it. That forges a kind of ease. Confidence. So yeah, confidence. And still, it is such a humbling path, right? Oh my goodness. If you're not being humbled, you're not practicing, right? We all have zones where we're a little bit, bewildered by life. And it feels like, well, we're doing the best we can, but we're kind of making it up as we go along. We don't know how to do this, and all the learning and all the goodness and all the whatever freedom is ours is sort of just like we feel like children again, bewildered, what to do, don't know. It's humbling. It's humbling. It's humbling to see the gap between what we know intellectually and what we have actually realized. What we've actually realized are it's only realization that changes behavior. And I'm not saying only enlightenment changes behavior, but only that which has been realized rather than known intellectually changes our behavior. It's humbling to see how easily we can be deceived, How easily we can be deceived, by seduced by our own mind, seduced by the very deeply camouflaged mechanisms of clinging. The mind builds a kind of house of cards, and then we live in that house, and then it collapses. And what we thought of was truth was really a kind of confabulation of greed and aversion, a way that we've concocted something. We're not lying. We're not lying, but we've concocted something out of our clinging. And so to begin to wake up to just to see how easy it is to kind of pull a fast one on ourselves. This is humbling. This is humbling. And it might just be a micro mood where it's like we just become convinced of something, and then the energy and body mind changes. We go outside, we look at the sky, we take a breath, we see a smile, we do something, and that house of cards falls. It's humbling to see. And so humility is a kind of openness to the data of this moment, but an unwillingness to cover over the mystery with self-serving certainties. We learn on this path, right? But we can never irreversibly rule out the possibility that wisdom is delusion. And that sounds maybe haunting or something, but it's sort of thrilling to me. That it's like everything, the structure of science, actually, everything is awaiting disconfirmation. Yeah, and that doesn't lead us into a kind of instability or something like that. It's just all tentative. We have to keep looking. Reading something, when research subjects, when they claim to be 98% certain about something, they're wrong about 30% of the time. When they estimate 99.9% certainty, they were wrong 19% of the time. And when we subjects them we when subjects estimated 99.99999 percent certainty, they were wrong 13% of the time. Something funny to me about that. So the permanent possibility of being wrong demands that we hedge. Don't know. We hedge epistemologically about knowing. We hedge morally. To forget the kind of permanent possibility of being wrong is the first step towards violence. And so the humility of which I speak is actually moves us in the direction of nonviolence. So much confidence, so much humility. Offer this for your consideration this morning, and I wish you all a good day, and we'll keep going tomorrow morning. Okay.